So, John, my parents might be in Phoenix in 2 weeks to visit their friend who's struggling with cancer, so you guys should connect there. Maybe you can pass on some important news about traveling around the Phoenix area. I'm thinking that if indeed Lori and I get a chance to visit Ruth Anna in a few weeks, we're hoping to get down to Palm Desert for a couple days, I'll have a chance to drive across to Phoenix and see our dear friend in the same area who is in late stage battle with cancer. So let's keep Ferrario's in prayer as they visit. And my parents are going down 2 weeks, I think, to see their friend. So Linda, could just... Let's see if Roger, if we can get... Okay. Lent started this week. And we are not the kind of liturgical church where we put on different robes and have different colors in our sanctuary and so forth for Lent. But there is some value in this period before Passion Week and Resurrection Sunday to think about Jesus on his way to the cross. And the text for this morning, the story for this morning, is just about five verses, a very short story in Mark's gospel that begins in a real way Jesus' journey to the cross. And in the same way that Passion Week in Mark's gospel begins with healing a blind man, the journey to the cross began with healing a blind man. His eyes were open, his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Mark 8:25. I really encourage you this week to pull out the Mark poster. There's copies in the back, copies online. It's up in front of you, and just take a look at the way the Bible Project people have divided Mark's gospel into part one, scene one, excuse me, act one, Galilee, who is Jesus? Act two, on the way from Galilee to Jerusalem, where the disciples learn not who he is, but what it means for Jesus to be Messiah. And act three, in Jerusalem, how Jesus becomes the king, the resurrection story. Just a beautiful way to think about Mark's gospel. On Wednesday night, we talked about the fact that Mark's Gospel, section one, begins with the Father saying, "This is my Son." Section two has at the very center of it, "This is my Son," at the Mount of Transfiguration. And in Act three, it is a Gentile Roman soldier who gets to say the key phrase in Act three, "Surely this man was the Son of God." Each act has this central statement of who Jesus is. God's son, and then the Gentile gets to wrap it up. Surely this man was the Son of God. We are going to be, for the next 40 days of Lent, in the middle section, on the way with Jesus from Galilee to Jerusalem, as along with the disciples, we have a chance to see more clearly who this Messiah we follow is. The text in Mark 8, begins in verse 22. Excuse me. I didn't look right. I was in Matthew 8. They came to Bethsaida, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. And when he had spit...
What are you guys doing? This is my house, and I'm getting tired of your religion. My name is Church and West. Okay. Every single one of you enjoyed the mental hospital. You're done telling me to shut.
Thank you. Thanks. Great, thanks. I think we might, Roger, could you cut the tape for just a minute? Thank you. Thanks, Roger. I'm in Mark chapter 8, and we're with Jesus in Bethesda. Jesus came to Bethesda, and some people brought this blind man to him and begged Jesus to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand, led him outside the village. And when he had spit on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" He looked up and said, "I see people, and they look like trees walking around." Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened, his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Jesus sent him home saying, "Do not go into the village." And the text from Mark's Gospel, a short story about Jesus' encounter with the blind man. And this morning, how this story gets us on the way to the cross. This is the big picture of Jesus in Galilee. And Bethsaida is a wonderful fishing village on the north side of the Sea of Galilee. It is a half day's walk from Jesus' hometown, his center town on the Sea of Galilee, Capernaum. So we're talking about a 15-minute drive, a half day's walk, if you're driving around this lake that's 10 miles north and south and 5 miles east and west. And if you zoom in on Bethsaida, you'll notice that it's on a really low, flat area on the north end of the Sea of Galilee. You might also ask, what is a fishing village doing a mile and a half away from the Sea of Galilee? If you look kind of on the map, you notice that. And there's two answers to that question. One is, this is a traditional site of Bethsaida. I think it's the right site, but there's another site closer to the lake that's a possible site for the city of the town of Bethsaida. I think people who are really smart think that what happened was in the 3rd and 6th centuries there were a series of earthquakes that raised this part of the Sea of Galilee and lowered the lake so that Bethsaida, which was in Jesus' day on the shore, now is a mile and a half away from the shore on a little bit of a hill. And I think that's the best answer to this question. That's why the geography doesn't always work out. And today, Bethsaida is a wonderful place to visit, because once it was destroyed during the Roman Wars, it was never rebuilt. And so when you wander through what we believe is Bethsaida today, we see a fisherman's house where they found fishing gear, and a winemaker's house where they actually found the wine storage cellar laid out. And it's a place where we can walk through and really think and talk about what it meant for Jesus to be here and to meet this blind man and heal him. Now the text says he took him outside, spit on his eyes, and when he had spit, he put his hands on him, and Jesus says, "Do you see anything?" Now there's a reason why this question is so important. Bethsaida, already in the first century, had a reputation for being a idolatrous city, for having rejected the ministry of Messiah. It's one of the cities Jesus curses in his Galilean ministry. And that also is evident today. For when you visit Bethsaida, you see these ancient pagan worship symbols sitting right at the gate to the city. And that is the gate behind the those obelisk, those stone worship symbols that represent pagan Canaanite worship. One of the things we do with trips we take to Bethsaida is we find somebody in the group, and this is not my last trip because it was all ladies on the trip. I don't want to do this to one of the ladies that you might know. This is Dave, a friend of mine. We say, let's just take a picture of you at the gates to Capernaum. And so you get ready to take a picture of him, and then you say, "Now, Dave, just so you know, that you're posing next to a Canaanite phallic worship symbol, and watch him jump." And it works every time. My dad jumped 3 feet, Dave jumped 3 feet, and Ruth Hilberdink on her last trip jumped 3 feet. She just didn't want to be that close, you know. And then we say, well, this is a reproduction. The original is in the Israel Museum that you see at the end of the trip. But the fact is that Capernaum already had a reputation for idolatry and for rejecting Jesus. So there was something the blind man had to see clearly, and then something the blind man had to see even more clearly. He looked up and he saw people wandering around, like looking like trees. He did not see clearly yet. So Jesus put his hands once more on this man's eyes. And then his eyes are opened, his sight is restored, and he sees everything clearly. That word's important because Jesus is going to come back to that at the end of our message today. Jesus sent him home saying, don't go into the village. Now, I want to start with just a couple big ideas about this text. One, Jesus bookends, as I've said, this journey from Galilee to Jerusalem, from ministry in Galilee for most of Jesus' 3 years on earth to Passion Week, his final week in Jerusalem. We are just a few weeks away from that, even in Mark's gospel. And we're only two chapters away from the triumphal entry. We're at the end of chapter 8. Chapter 11 is the triumphal entry, so we're very, very close. Mark bookends this journey. If you notice, it begins, well, it's actually down here, but I should put it up here, in chapter 8 with the first healing, and it ends down here in chapter 10 with another healing of blind men in Jericho. What Mark is saying, and in an intentional way, is that Jesus is teaching his disciples a very, very important lesson. His disciples in the first century, Mark's original readers in the middle of the first century, the church getting ready to suffer persecution, and believers who have read it for the last 2,000 years are learning the lesson that it was one thing in the first 8 chapters to meet Jesus, but they still didn't know what the ministry of Messiah really meant. They were still the blind who needed to see. And this two-step healing brings about a really, really important question. The second thing I want to mention is that Jesus gets his hands dirty in this text. Most of Jesus' miracles are miracles where he just says, right? Winds be still, and they're still. He just simply says it. Young girl, arise, and she gets up. This is one of those miracles where Jesus actually touches, gets his hands dirty, even in what we can read as a first century medicinal action of spitting on somebody's eyes, but he actually engages with this man with touch and physicalness. And what I'm thinking is that we have Jesus who sometimes just speaks things into existence, like Genesis chapter 1 where God says, let there be light, and there's light. And sometimes we have Jesus getting his hands dirty when we have a picture of how God is working from below, up close, personal. And in Genesis 1 and 2, he speaks creation into being. And then in chapter 2, he forms the man. And here I really get the idea. I really think Jesus is in stage 2 of creation, where he's getting his hands dirty. And in fact, this is the second part of the story. This is recreation for this man. This is Jesus not breathing into his nostrils the breath of life. This is Jesus spitting into his eyes. I know that's a horrible picture. This is Jesus spitting into his eyes the ability to see him. And remember, the disciples are watching this, and they're asking themselves this really important question: why a two-part healing? And why does Jesus tell the man not to go right back into town and tell his neighbors? Now, there is I gave a hint for the first answer. It'll come up again. The second question, why does Jesus not tell the man not to go in and tell his neighbors? This is not the first time he's done it. He's done it with the demoniac, where he says, don't go back into town. And later on in this very chapter, he's going to tell his disciples, don't tell anyone what I've just told you. Why the secrecy? And the kind of traditional answer to that question is, well, Jesus just didn't want big crowds around him as he was going from Galilee to Jerusalem. He wanted a little bit of privacy during this really important part of his ministry where he focuses more on his disciples. And that is part of the question, well, part of the answer. But part of it is the crowd issue and Jesus not wanting the Pharisees to know where he is and all that, that's involved. And that's partly true. But I think there's something even more deep going on here. See, I think Jesus tells the man not to tell his neighbors. And he tells his disciples in the very next story, don't tell anyone. Not because he doesn't want the crowds, but because his disciples don't see clearly yet. They know they've met Jesus, the Christ, but they still don't understand his ministry. So as we continue on, keep these two questions in mind. Why the two-part healing, and why does Jesus tell the man not to go tell his neighbors? Now, I said that this the blind man bookend the pilgrimage, the chapters 9 and 10 in the Gospel of Mark, this pilgrimage from Galilee to Jerusalem. I've tried wondering, is this the end of the beginning of Jesus' ministry, or is this the beginning of the end of Jesus' ministry? It doesn't really matter how you phrase it, but it begins and ends with blind men and then with the disciples. So Jesus heals the blind man, and it says, and now he saw clearly, and the very next verses, Jesus and his disciples go up to Caesarea Philippi, as far away from Jerusalem as they can get. And he asked them, who do people say I am? Remember, that's the question of the first panel, the first act. Who is Jesus? Who do they say I am? Jesus knows he's the Messiah who's going to suffer and die. His disciples think he's the Messiah who's going to beat the Romans. He's the Messiah who's going to set them up on thrones to reign with him. That's what they're still thinking. And so Jesus begins his pilgrimage by correcting their thinking and by showing them how blind they really are. They're the ones who need to see in this story. And as you think again about the Bible Project poster, the center panel is, what does it mean for Jesus to be Messiah? And it's in this panel that he says things like the Son of Man is going to die and rise again. It's in this panel that he says the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. This is where the disciples, and this is where we learn the message about what it means for Jesus to be Messiah and what it means for us to follow him. That's why this is so important. So they reply. Some say you're Elijah. Some say you're John the Baptist, one of the prophets. And Jesus asked them, who do you say I am? And Peter speaks up, you're the Christ. And Jesus again warns them not to tell anyone about him. I don't think this is because Jesus doesn't want the crowds to know the answer. I think it's because Jesus says, you're not ready for the answer yet. You haven't yet learned the lesson of Messiah. How do we know this? Because Peter responds to Jesus' next teaching. He began to teach that the Son of Man must suffer many things, be rejected by the elders, the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He spoke plainly about these things, clearly. This is what the blind man could finally see. He spoke plainly about this, and Peter, of course, says, boy, that's what we've been waiting for all the time, right? And now we really understand, and we're going to get behind you, Jesus, and we know what it means to follow you as your disciples, and we're on board with this new messianic plan you've got, right? Wrong, absolutely wrong. Peter takes him aside and begins, as only Peter can do in the Gospels, right, begins to rebuke Jesus. He still doesn't understand. And what Mark is telling us is that they might have had some sight about who Jesus is, but they still do not see more clearly what the messianic journey is, what discipleship is going to mean. Peter's response shows that they've only started to see clearly. And in this second warning, in this second timing issue, Jesus tells the disciples they need to wait until they see more clearly. the suffering of the Messiah before they're going to be able to tell the story. Now, there is one event, and it's the hint in the Bible is that it takes up most of the Gospels, this one event. There's one event that is central to the disciples learning what it means to follow Jesus, what it means for Jesus to be Messiah, and that event is the cross. That's going to be the central, that is where they learn the lesson. That's where they learn the lesson about what it means to be a disciple. That's where they learn the lesson about what it means for God to love us. That's where they learn all the important lessons in the gospel. And so my question, as we approach this following Jesus from Galilee to Jerusalem over the next 40 days, is what do I want to see more clearly as we follow Jesus to the cross on Sunday mornings and on Wednesday evenings for the next 6 weeks? We'll be following Jesus. And just, I want to start by asking this really, really important question. 40 days on the way to the cross with Jesus. And three thoughts to get us started. One, I asked the question on Wednesday night, and people really responded really well to it. What's going to be the sign that that the kingdom begins to break in as Jesus reveals what it means for him to be Messiah? And we kind of talked about outside things. The text today got me thinking differently. I think the first sign that I'm on this discipleship journey with Jesus, the first sign that the kingdom is breaking in, is not going to be, I'm going to hear God speak out there, or I'm going to see God at work out there. It's going to be something that happens inside. It's going to be me seeing more clearly. That's going to be the sign the kingdom is breaking in. That's why I love that Isaiah text so much. Out of gloom and darkness, when Messiah begins breaking in, the eyes of the blind will see. And once more, the humble will rejoice in the Lord. And those of us who understand our need to meet the suffering Jesus will rejoice in the Holy One of Israel. I love that Isaiah 29 passage. The second thing that strikes me, the second thing to watch for on this journey is that it wasn't just at the beginning of Jesus' ministry that Satan tries to distract him from the cross, right? Satan's plan is still to skip the cross. And anytime we see the gospel presented without the cross, watch out. And we can go through some of those gospels today, whether it's the health and wealth gospel or the social gospel, whatever false gospel there is, it will leave the cross out. That's Satan's plan. That's why Jesus rebukes Peter so strongly at this point, and follows up his conversation with Peter, get behind me, Satan, and then this is what it means to follow me. If anyone would follow me, he must not reject the cross, but take up the cross and follow me. That's going to be the sign of authentic discipleship, bearing our cross. The picture of what it means to follow Jesus that the disciples had in mind is sitting on a throne or beating the Romans. The picture Jesus had in mind of being a disciple is dying to self. That's what they learned in these 40 days to the cross. That's why the church has had a Lent season for the last 2,000 years. And finally, so if I'm beginning to see more clearly, and if I'm understanding that discipleship means to take up my cross and follow Jesus, And if the what I'm learning about the Messiah is that suffering comes before glory, and everything else that gets packed into these texts, if that's happening, Jesus made one more timing statement at the beginning of his journey. We followed this on Wednesday night, where coming down from the Mount of Transfiguration, where the disciples had a chance to see the glory before they see the suffering, Jesus gave them orders not to tell anybody what they had seen until the resurrection. Now, which side of the resurrection are we? We're on the far side of resurrection. And if I'm reading Jesus correctly, I'm reading, we have the story of the cross, and we have the story of the resurrection, which means the church now has the authority to go into this world and make disciples. And I just, for me, following Jesus to the cross is this realization moment that we now have this ministry that he told his disciples to wait on. He told the blind man not to go into the village. He told the disciples not to say anything until they understood the suffering Messiah and until they saw the power of resurrection. And when we know those two things, what it means that Jesus died for me and what it means that Jesus rose from the dead, when I know those two things, then I'm ready to tell anyone. What Jesus is all about. Father, thank you this morning for the opportunity to begin this journey with Jesus. And Father, as we look forward to the cross, as we look forward to Resurrection Sunday, Father, I would ask that you would open our eyes to see more clearly Jesus' ministry and his love for us on the way. In Jesus' name, amen. Gay and Ryan picked out our last song, Crown with Many Crowns. We're going to sing two songs, and then we're going to sing the final verse for our doxology. Would you stand with me?